Hi, I'm Amanda Pacheco.
This is Sheila.
Hello, it's Davida.
I'm Gina Lovato.
Hey, it's Alana Dunn.
I'm Caitlin Bailey.
This is Melissa Novak.
It's Sean Jacobson.
Hey, it's Bethany Nicole, and welcome to Sex Party.
And welcome to Sex Party.
Welcome to Sex Party.
Welcome to Sex Party.
Welcome to Sex Party.
Sex Party with your host, Dustin Rybka.
Hello and welcome to Sex Party. I am your host, Dustin Rybka. And oh boy, do I have an episode for you guys this week. My guest, Jennifer Mondello, aka Jennifer Steele. Jennifer is a porn legend. She is an author. She is also famously the woman who took down Ron Jeremy. This episode is a lot of things. This episode is packed with some dark stuff, some fun stuff. Trigger warning, we do talk about rape and all of the terrible shit that Ron Jeremy is accused of doing. We talk about grooming and Jennifer's crusade against that. It's also a very fun episode, believe it or not. We talk about the 20-person gangbang she did, what she's up to on OnlyFans, and so much more. I'm honored to have her. I'm honored to hear her story, and I can't wait for you guys to hear it too. So without further ado, enjoy my conversation with Jennifer Steele.
This week's conversation.
Jennifer Mondello, aka Jennifer Steele, the famous porn star, author. Welcome to Sex Party. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Doing wonderful. Dodging all these sicknesses that are going on around me.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked a little bit earlier offline about how you're sick on a Monday, you're fine on a Tuesday, then you're either depressed or sick again on a Wednesday. I've been going through it. It's this weird fall transition, which is never fun, right? And do we just drink vodka to get through this? Do we take vitamins? Do we do both? Right. So like, you and I have tried to put this interview together for a while. I'm incredibly honored to have you, to be honest. You're a legend. And first of all, I just want to say thank you for doing the show because it means a lot.
No, thanks for having me.
Of course.
Yeah, it's exciting to be on.
And second of all, you know, for the people who maybe, you know, maybe they're younger, maybe they're living under a rock, maybe they're sexually repressed. Like, can you talk a little bit about who you are, what you done and what you do?
Sure. I actually, like, if I say in one word or phrase, what I mostly was during the height of my career is I was an exotic dancer and I did fire shows. And I started doing porn a few years into that so I could promote my fire shows by mixing in fire with my porn. So I did that in a few scenes. I made over 100 movies. I did a bunch of fire stuff, and I was the first porn star to breathe fire while having sex. I was on HBO's Sexcetera. I've been on Howard Stern, HBO's Real Sex. And then recently last year, I came out with a book called Adult Agency, and it's about how the industry sort of let the Ron Jeremy situation go for so long. And now I'm teaching at colleges about sexual grooming. So that's, where I'm at.
So you've had an incredible, storied life. So that we have that on record, right? And you know, a lot of places that I've read, people I've talked to about you, I think, maybe we'll just get into it right now and get it out of the way. But like, you are sort of credited as either the person or one of the people who actually finally brought Ron Jeremy down.
Yeah, actually, it was the last time he committed a sex crime, and the person called the cops. The cops were looking for any kind of history, and one of the things that they found was my old articles. Of interviews that I had done from the time he did it, you know, all the way through. And those interviews were pretty much ignored by the industry. They still booked him for stuff, still sent him around. when that last incident happened, the cops called me. And I was one of the people who told them this has been going on for a long time with a lot of people. So yeah, I mean, I was part of the investigation.
Right. And again, like, this is sensitive territory. I mean, I know you're tough and smart and have
I've been through it all at this point.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, you know, I never, I'm not going to be the interview guy who like presses where it's like really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I mean, unless someone's like an asshole, then maybe I would press, but you're definitely not an asshole. So I just want to be, I want to be real, but I also want to be sensitive to, you know, the crimes he committed. We are talking about rape, obviously.
Yeah.
And so if any point, if you're like, I'm done with this conversation, just you can tap out.
I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, yeah. The tap out button is always there, right?
Yeah.
On Sex Party, because you can't have a sex party without a tap out button. Come on, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so this guy, Ron Jeremy, in case the viewers don't know, famous porn star, was in the industry forever.
He was the number one most recognizable porn star in the world, and I believe still is today.
Right. He was not a good looking man. And that was part of his whole shtick. Right. Mm-hmm. I actually met him when I was like 22, like in a strip club at one of his strip club appearances. And he was so like blindly drunk. They were just kind of shuffling him from person to person and like taking pictures or whatever. And, you know, there was a documentary made about him, and then he was sort of this celebrated, hey, anybody can do it, right? If I can do it, da-da-da. And then the bombshells, right? And then it turns out and I will let you take the wheel now, because that's just my Dustin fucking, you know, whatever.
Yeah, well, there are 50 women who came forward that were in Los Angeles County, and their stories were viable enough that it was part of the case. Now, that's not counting all the other women around the country who weren't part, you know, because this case was only for, you know, Los Angeles County. It was that 50 is underreported. It's like it's been going on for decades. And he would go to a different city, you know, probably every week, you know, if not more cities. And they would send him to strip clubs. So, you know, a lot of his victims were sex workers, and like their stories wouldn't be taken seriously. There were times cops were called and then just walked away with an autograph. You know, like it's imagine that. Like, that's one girl that was somebody who was up in Michigan. She called the cops and they said that she couldn't prove she didn't want it. And then they left, and one of the cops had an autograph in his hand from Ron. It's like, I mean, it's like just surreal.
Yeah. Yeah. So, no, I mean,
now they were all ready to take him to trial. Like the Paul Thompson, who was also the same prosecutor who prosecuted Weinstein. And I believe he prosecuted the Cosby case, too. He was the prosecutor for this. And before they could take it to trial, they found Ron to have dementia, and he wasn't able to stand trial. So there's going to be no trial. He's just going to be in a state hospital for the rest of his life.
Okay. Wow. All right. So did they obviously used the dementia to get out of the trial. So were they trying to use the dementia to say that he was committing these crimes because he had dementia for the?
No, you know? That never came up. That wasn't something that ever came up.
Right. Yeah. That was kind of a dumb question, but hey, there's no.
That's not a dumb question, because honestly, when it came up, I thought of it that people might, you know,
sure.
I'm like, it's not a dumb question at all.
Well, we believe in dumb questions. We are the king of dumb questions, because you got to mix in some exactly, and you got to mix in some of those with the smart questions, right? We need to play to the full spectrum of human intelligence, because nobody is dumb, except for some of the people in my comments. They're kind of dumb. Okay, so what was his game? Because so this is the thing that I think is
he
just
was a
weak.
Groomer.
Sure.
He has. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No. This is all you.
One of the things that his MO was that he would gain people's trust. And his celebrity alone kind of like helped do that for him, because people assumed, oh, well, he's a porn star. So, you know, it's not like he's going to try to rape me. This guy gets more pussy. Can I say that word here?
Okay. Of course.
Yes. It's sex party. So,
yeah. So people say whatever the fuck you want.
This guy gets more pussy than God. So, you know, why would he rape anybody? So people would assume that they're safe with him as far, you know, as far as consent goes. Mm-hmm. I mean, even afterwards, people would say, well, why would Ron Jeremy want to rape anybody? Like, people didn't believe it. So, like, the people going into it, they assumed the same thing, that it was a trustworthy. Like, I know with me, he was my safe guy. He was supposed to be the one to take me around and introduce me to people and make sure I was safe. And I was told by people that I trusted that he was trustworthy in that way. And so what he would do is he would gain trust. And then he would find ways of isolating. Oh, he would have a need, like somebody, like a lot of times he would help somebody, offer to help somebody with their career. And then he would isolate them. He would get them into a tight spot. Usually it was either his apartment or a bathroom or like a broom closet of a, strip club or an adult. Like there was an adult, one guy, the owner of the adult store, he raped the guy's wife in a broom closet. Like it was always in a tight space. Like, and they would trust him enough to follow him in there, not thinking that anything was going to happen. And then once he got them into that tight space, that's when he would rape them.
Jeez.
So it was like, it was grooming, but it was like a quick, it didn't take years. It took like, you know, days or hours with him.
Yeah.
So in the grooming process.
He was doing this to like fans, but also to his coworkers, like people, like women he would do scenes with, he would then rape them afterwards.
It was mostly like mostly by a long shot, sex workers. I know that there were a lot of women that he met at the Rainbow Room. Allegedly, he didn't drug me. So I'm going to say allegedly he drugged some people. Like did the whole Bill Cosby thing where he'd like they'd already be drinking or something. And then he'd give them a drink that had something else in it. I know he tried to get me to drink and I don't drink. And I think that kind of, that threw a little wrench in his game for a minute, you know, but.
Right. Of course. And so did you have a scene with him, scenes with him before? And then
no.
I
never done a scene when he raped me. It was like I was there for my first photo shoot, like for Hustler magazine. And it was like a no contact shoot. And he just was going to be in the picture. Like it wasn't, there was no scene. Like I'd never done a scene. My whole thing is that I was going to come down and meet people and kind of stick my toe in a little bit. See, you know, like maybe do some solo girl stuff. I wasn't even doing like movies with guys or anything. I was just there to take a picture.
Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I know there were other photo shoots that he, there was around the same time, there was a photo shoot that this happened at, where he was at, that he did that too. But he's done it on the set. I don't want to name the name, but, there was one girl who was on a set and she was doing a scene with somebody else and the director had left the room and he just came in and started and just stuck it in her. Like just there was no schedule. Like there was, he just, you know, started having sex with her. There was no consent. There was no, you know.
And like you said before, like his game was to get these people isolated and alone, and sort of use his, celebrity and his safe guy attitude to and potentially some sort of chemical, right? So like which allegedly potentially, like, so he would use a combination of these tactics to get people alone. I mean, with your rape experience with him, I mean, what do you think, was it power that was motivating him? Because
I think it was narcissism, and I think it was, he was having a hard time. Well, first of all, I know there were people that he did this to like 10, 20 years before he did it to me. So like, I don't know if this would, you know, have anything to do with that, but it seemed like him being an aging porn star, he felt like he had something to prove. Like that he nailed me, like that he nailed his, you know, it's right. Like almost he felt like it just felt like he was trying to live up to the whole Ron Jeremy, like, women can't, you know, say no to him type thing. And that if he didn't, he wouldn't be him. If that makes sense.
No, yeah, it makes a fucking ton of sense. So, yeah. And because he was aging.
He didn't
understand
boundaries. There were no, like, he didn't understand, respect boundaries of anyone. And he would constantly test people's boundaries, you know, like. Like if somebody was eating, he'd just like pick up food off their plate and eat. Like, like he just was that. Yeah. He was so narcissistic that he didn't respect boundaries in general. So
not only a rapist, but like an all around asshole.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me wonder what happened to him.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because there is such a story that he tells, and if you watch, like, you know, I remember, you know, 20 years ago, like watching the documentary and it being fascinating how he was sort of like, they, at least in the film, it was like, excuse me, Jesus, there's the fucking flu, not flu again. he was sort of like this everyman, right? He was like this, mm-hmm. like kind of ugly dude, who shouldn't be in porn. And yet he's like the biggest male porn star or whatever. So that was sort of his thing. And they talk about his childhood and all the things he wanted to be, but you're right. It does make you wonder what happened to him to make him that sort of hungry for validation that he would have to rape people.
This is what I know, is that after this happened to me, I got really sexually aggressive and it was anger. And I feel like they're like, it's almost like trauma passed on and it like revealed itself in some really ugly behavior for a while. And until I went through and writing this book, like I really didn't see it, but then I looked back and I'm like, wow, I behaved in certain ways that where I didn't respect other people's boundaries either, but it was as a response to this. And that's why it makes me wonder what happened to him. Like what, you know, did something happen to him when he was a kid? Like, what? Where is this anger? You know, where is it coming from? This urge? You know, I don't know.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm totally. And I want to say,
mean to get dark there, but.
No, we can get dark. It's that's the thing. Sometimes the party gets dark, you know. And yeah. I think that we should follow it wherever it goes. And
yeah. Okay.
You know, so whatever. But I mean, first and foremost, like I want to say sorry that happened to you, because that's just unacceptable on a human level, right? So sorry that happened to you, and two, like, thanks for like having the fucking guts to write about it. Thanks for having the guts to come on my show and talk about it.
Thank you.
I think that and like to admit you wonder what happened to him, and to admit that you got sexually aggressive and didn't you know, and you cross other people's boundaries. Like that's fucking G shit. That's like real growth. And like, I'm such a fan of that.
That you just said it right there. The book made me grow. So, and it made me forgive. I forgive him. I don't hate him. I don't think he's a horrible person. I think what he did was horrible. But I think right now in his dementia, he's probably looking at himself in the mirror, and that's its own hell, you know? So I think in some ways he's getting punished because he's having to look at himself. His ego has been shattered. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, not to compare him to this next person, but they say that happened to Al Capone. Like, you know, he was murdered like 600 people and did God knows what to women. And then he wound up with dementia, and the last like 5 to 7 years of his life, they say he was sort of tortured by the ghosts of his victims. And he was reliving all of that from a point of, wow, I did that. I'm a terrible person. So, you know, call it karma, call it a numbers game, call it what goes around, whatever. I mean, that's, you know, that's fascinating that would, the things that you would do to people would come back around, and there's no escape from that. So,
yeah.
Okay. Well, let's pour a metaphorical drink and move into. So, okay. So that happens to you. You're not even really truly in the porn industry yet. You haven't done scenes.
No, and that, well, I did scenes. My first scene was, I think, 2 months after that.
Okay.
Two months after that.
Yeah.
It was right after my birthday. Yeah, it was 2 months after that.
Okay.
The rape was December 12th, and then I did a movie in February.
Okay.
So, okay. 2 months.
Okay, so what, I mean, you have such a fucking, like, legendary storied career in the industry, and also, too, like, just as, like, a voice, not only with this the stuff with Ron Jeremy, but just a voice in general. I mean, you carry yourself well, you are incredibly smart, obviously you wrote this amazing book, but, like, even before that, you were, like, going for it, you were, like, in it to win it with the porn game, and so... I guess my first question about your time in the industry is, what was the thing that made you go from exotic dancer, fire breather to, like, okay, you know what? I will do a film.
It was the rape, honestly. The rape just threw me right in. Like it like that, because I kind of had it in my head of, like, well, I've already been through the worst of it, so I might as well, you know, I didn't want that to be, you know, what I remembered about porn. So I just went and started doing movies that, like, really, like, right away after that.
Wow.
So the club I was working at, they took me to the ABN show, and I met a bunch of different directors and stuff there.
Okay. And was it, so you were essentially reclaiming your
I
power.
Was reclaiming my right to consent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what? I kind of love that, to be honest with you. Yeah, I mean, how powerful is that? Jesus Christ. See, this is why I'm so happy you're here. Mm-hmm. Like, what a fucking incredible move and an incredible story. And as you moved, you know, in the beginning, I mean, can you
set this? I think a lot of people in general, they get into the sex industry because they've had, and, you know, a lot of people are going to hate it because I hate you for saying this, but because they've been through some kind of trauma. And by sort of recreating that on their terms, It's and they don't realize they're doing it. Like, I didn't realize I was doing it for years, but now, like, when I'm streaming and stuff and I'm, like, masturbating in front of people and I'm, like, watching them masturbate, I'm thinking I'm trauma bonding right now. But I love it, you know. I mean, it's like that switch has been flipped, so, like, I'm, you know, being in the industry, I could be on my own terms. And I think a lot of, like, trauma victims who get into the industry is the same way.
Yeah, I would, that makes a ton of sense. With that, well, you didn't realize that, but as you started in the industry, like, it was, I think 90, I want to say 97 is when you started ish.
Yeah. 97 was when the rape happened. And then, the beginning of 98 was my first movie.
Okay. So, I mean, that's like the golden era of, like, VHS moving into DVD porn, right? That's, like, where I came up. I was in high school and we would sneak into the back of, like, the family video into the adult section and just be like, it was like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory, you know, all the boxes and whatever. This is like the internet was around, but it was pre-internet. So what was it like coming into the porn industry in 98, like in the middle of all that craziness?
It wasn't this, I don't know how to explain. there was a lot of, like, it was just a lot of, like, there was a lot of grooming and sexual harassment back then. Like, with, like, and I wouldn't say on most sets, but on enough that when I look back at that time, I think of that whole, like, it's just that same kind of vibe of, like, I got in with one producer and, like, they didn't want me to talk to other talent. They didn't, like, because they wanted to make sure that I only worked for them. And, They also booked Ron Jeremy, and, like, I told them about what happened, and they'd had other complaints from other people, but, like, they didn't do anything. But, like, it just, like, it wasn't, like, the industry pretty much reflects what happened to me. You know, like when I first got in it, it just, like, it didn't make me feel much better in the beginning. But then once I started dancing, like, once I started bringing fire into porn, that's when it really started working for me, because the whole reason I wanted to get into porn was to market my fire shows. Mm-hmm. And then, so the first time I did that, I was working for Extreme, Rob Black's company. And Tom Zupko was the director for that. And he was the first one who was like willing to listen to my creative ideas. And so that was the first time I ever breathed fire while I was having sex in a movie. That was with Brian Sherwood, was the actor who was underneath me. And I just, he had me breathe fire right into the camera. He said, don't even worry about the camera. Just breathe it right into the camera. I want the shot. And that was exactly the director I wanted. And it turned out to be, it was a beautiful shot. And then once I did that, then I was able, like other directors, Jim Powers is the other one that I did a lot of fire stuff for him too. Like he just, it was the directors who gave me a chance to do stuff with fire were my favorite ones to work with. And I worked for some other people. I loved working for Naughty America just cause they were so professional. MILF Hunter, you remember MILF Hunter?
Yes, I do.
I did a scene with him that for some reason just like blew up. It was just a great scene. I did like a lot of the MILF stuff, MILF Seekers, MILF Hunter. Once I got away from the initial people, that were kind of like had to do with Ron Jeremy and all that, once I got away from them, I enjoyed myself a lot more.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, that was my next question.
Was that too long of an answer?
No. Jeez. No. Talk forever. The audience, the less I have to talk on this fucking thing, the better. They want to hear from you, not me, and my little fucking quips and shit. But you did enjoy all around like your time in porn, would you say?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The porn industry as a whole, I loved it. I really enjoyed it. It's other than the predators that are kind of like, you know, in the corners, you know, that's the part of the entire sex industry where I have found the most like sexual harassment, was in the movie porn industry. Where I didn't find that like working in strip clubs and, you know, doing other stuff.
Yeah. And well, you know, and I think, and I would love to get your, cause I have like a basic bitch knowledge of this, but just from what I know doing this podcast and in my real life, I've heard scenarios and I know people and I'm not going to mention any names, but I have a friend who, well, first of all, I want to say, I think, you know, manipulation and grooming, sometimes I think, again, just my opinion, fucking podcast guy, but it's so subtle, right? And especially in your industry, and it's so small that you don't realize that these things are happening till way later. And I had a friend, you know, who was a little bit down on her luck, you know, answered some sort of ad on Craigslist. It was like $5,000 to like have sex with some guy for this porn company. She wasn't a porn star. She got tested. She goes to the thing. And instead of one guy coming out, three guys come out and they're like, hey, surprise. So like those little things. And then there's another company where I know a couple girls actually who were acquaintances of mine, we're friends of friends. They worked for a company called Girls Do Porn. And it was just like, these guys were like, hey,
I've seen that.
And the manipulation is more or less like, you're here, we've paid you $3,000. You can't say, why would you say no? Why would you, and you're pressured, right?
That kind of thing used to happen. Like when I first got, and maybe it was because I was young and new. Like I can't really see that happening now because I know, like, I look out for the, what it was back then is they would say, our company is looking for a contract girl. We need a contract girl. So, I mean, maybe if you want to come to dinner with me, we'll talk about it.
Oh God.
You know, cause I want to talk about, you know, possibly giving you a contract and then, you know, and then it's, you know, goes from there.
Yeah. So the typical
that was always the way I knew somebody was like going to start grooming me was he's just as soon as they use the word contract, I'm thinking this guy's going to try to fuck me.
Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, Jesus, like women don't have to fucking go through that enough already. Yeah. And then you're doing it. You're getting it double because these guys are like.
Well, that's the thing, too, is like I know like I worked for a company where it wasn't like I was able to get out of this, but his whole thing was that, oh, because I lived in Florida, so they had to mail me my paycheck. But he used to make the girls have sex with him to get their paychecks. And this was like a, you know, this is somebody who, like, produced a lot of movies. Like, he's, you know, an AVN winner. And that was, like, their normal just routine. Like, it was just normalized that, you know, they had to go fuck him to get their paycheck. And it's like, they already did their work. Why are they, you know?
Yeah, that's...
And it's like, if they didn't, they just would, you know, they just wouldn't work again. You know, like if, you know, he wouldn't like, he would give them their paycheck, but then they just wouldn't work again if they didn't, you know, do something with them.
Right. They're not on the call sheet.
Yeah. There was a lot of that kind of stuff that went on.
Yeah, I bet. Especially in the 90s and early 2000s.
But now, like the whole thing now is streaming and OnlyFans and stuff like that. I don't have to deal with any of that shit.
Yeah. Yeah, because you essentially, like, you are your own producer. You are your own director. It's your creative vision. Mm-hmm. You can do whatever you're comfortable with, that sort of thing. I love that. Is the person who was, the like, holding the paychecks, whatever, or did they get caught doing that?
No, he's I don't know if he still produces or not. I don't even really know what the movie business is like right now.
Wow. Well, hopefully he's selling cars somewhere. Okay. So your time in the industry that you enjoyed, right? When you started to feel you work in the fire breathing, you're a fire starter. In many ways, right? Mm-hmm. Might be an episode title here, right? We might have something, which I love. Absolutely. What did that feel like to finally find amazing people who listened to you? Did you then feel more comfortable to like get wild with the sex and do things that you maybe were pushing the envelope? Like once you felt okay, how did that feel?
It was all very exhibitionary sex. Like it was like a dance, you know, just like for show. It wasn't, I'm not saying that I didn't enjoy it, you know, because my own narcissistic, you know, my own narcissism, you know, got a fill from being able to entertain naked and, you know, it was very free in that sense. It wasn't sexually satisfying. But that's not really what I was there for. I was there more for, to be the center of attention, put on a show.
Yeah. So that aspect of it turned you on because you were like in control. Everyone's watching you. Okay. So was there ever a time where you felt sexually gratified on set at all?
I never had one orgasm on set ever.
Wow. Okay.
Now I've had plenty of orgasms right after I got off the set. Like I got sexually excited, but I never got, like, nobody ever made me orgasm. Like, the clitoris isn't really, like, if you watch porn, they don't really pay attention much to the clitoris, and it would be covered up to pleasure me anyway, so.
Yeah.
It'd be covered in the mouth.
So they were just, like, working you to the absolute, like, minimum, like, where you'd be turned on, and then after the scene, you'd go and masturbate or do whatever.
Yeah,
because they're hiring you to put on a show, and so you're putting on a show, and, like, unfortunately, these dudes are, like,
so much the dudes, but like I can't, like, when I'm, like, to be honest, like when I'm trying to come, I'm gonna take you to my bedroom, okay?
Sure. And let's
go. Even if I'm having sex with a guy, I like to rub my clit while I'm doing it, while he's fucking me. Mm-hmm. and that's how I come, like, on his dick. And it's like, and I can't do that, like, they wouldn't let me do it. It would probably be boring to watch, I don't know, but like in porn I couldn't, like, do it to, you know, because I have to do the same thing, you know, for a few minutes and not change. And it's like it's not what they wanted to see. So, you know.
Yeah, you need you need that consistency, which is a whole other topic that us men have a hard time with is like, you know, when she says she's going to come, like, stay at the same fucking pace.
Yeah, don't change. Yeah. And the thing is like I'd get to the point where I felt like, okay, if I just keep doing this, I'm going to come. And then they'd like say, oh, well, move your leg to the right, you know, and it's like the whole thing just blown. So I never had an orgasm in porn. I've done a 20 man gangbang and I didn't have an orgasm. Because it wasn't, you know, I've got dog hair.
Well, I think, you know, I've heard that tale before where women do get turned on and then they are in the shower afterwards and they're masturbating to get to finally have an orgasm or whatever. Because it's such a performative.
Yeah.
You know, such a performative thing. I mean, you opened the can of worms, 20 man gangbang, right? Was that the wildest thing that you've done during your career in mainstream porn, do you think?
That was the most hardcore scene. Like if somebody, like people say, what's your favorite scene? And there's different scenes that like, you know, answer different questions. And that's definitely the most like hardcore that I've ever like, It was the Mexican anal gangbang.
Is that what they called it?
Yeah. So I mean, right there it tells you like, and there was a guy in there with a dick that was like that. I've seen it since, and it like I'm amazed that my asshole stretched that much.
Like, yeah.
But I've also I did a midget gangbang, and that was the funnest I've ever had on a set. That was the best.
Okay. Okay, so like both titles like totally date exactly what it was like. This is probably like what, early 2000s, I would imagine.
Okay, because they would have to call it a little person game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like I don't know that they would say the 20 person Mexican gangbang. I don't know that would fly.
Mexican anal. No, it was all Mexicans, and it was anal. Right. It was a Mexican anal gangbang.
Yeah. Okay. But like, I don't know. I feel like there'd be someone like, wait a minute, guys, this sounds a little,
they don't age well.
Yeah, exactly. They do not age well at all. There's like a level of like baked in racism.
If you look at a lot of the titles, like the way they, like if you look at a lot of the porn titles, it's like, I don't know how they like have got, I mean, even back then I look at them and I'm like, you, like even just like blacks and blondes, like to me, it's so like, mm-hmm. why isn't it just two people?
Yeah.
But I guess if people are looking at like for a certain aesthetic, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah. It's definitely fetishized and like, you know, they try to like crank that up as high as it'll go to like get the clicks and the money and like whatever.
Yeah. But even now, I'll tell you, like streaming, there are things that are said and that people want me to say that I'm surprised in this day and age. Like it's I don't know what I'm trying to say. So,
well, I catch your drift a bit, right? And like, and you're talking about like mainstream porn, obviously, or requests that you get on like OnlyFans.
No, I'm talking about like when we're streaming live, which mm-hmm. is like, okay, I mean, like for me, that's my bread and butter. Like that's my main thing, you know. And then I'm kind of building an OnlyFans on the side. Mm-hmm. But like they have like the BBC, you know, and it's like, it's definitely, they've created, like a mood around like a race, like it's,
yeah.
And there are certain things that people want me to say that I can't say, that I won't say because sure. I love everybody. And it's just funny because like these old titles, like they don't age well, but at the same time, there are people with like, and I only see it in the sex industry where like they want, it's almost like they want to own the racism words more. So they want people to call them those things.
Yeah. It's crazy.
That makes sense. It is crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. It's a whole like racism in the porn industry or the sex industry rather is like a whole other beast. That's like, doesn't make,
That insult are the things that turn people on in the sex mm-hmm. industry. Like it's so it's like there's this weird, it gets weird.
Yeah.
I think I walked into another dark space. Sorry.
No, you're good. You're good. Well, you could blow fire and light it back up. So what I will ask you is, what did it feel like? Like truly, like, and take me to like the week before, right? Like when you know you're doing a 20-man gangbang, like physically, mentally, what does that take? What do you?
I was scared. I was like, I mean, I knew I'd been in like 5-6 guy gangbangs before. And I think there were like, I don't know, 8 or 9 people in the midget gangbang. That was like the most that I'd been with. And I knew I could do it. I'm thinking, you know, I mean, it's really 3 at a time, you know, like,
sure. And,
you know, no matter how, it's just 3 at a time, different people taking turns. But what really hit me, oh, this isn't going to age well.
Well, it's totally up to you. So,
so when I drove up to the set of the Mexican gangbang, mm-hmm. they were sitting on the curb, like, and it reminded me of Home Depot, like where they're sitting on the curb waiting for work.
So was that something that they like did on purpose, or they were just hanging out, or like,
I don't know. But like when I saw that and I saw how many 20 people were,
oh God. Yeah.
It was like when I was thinking about it, I didn't realize until I saw all these people sitting on the curb lined up, and it was like 20 people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, it's a fucking
so
lot.
Yeah, I mean, it was that was when I was like, oh my God, you know, there's a lot of people.
Well, you know, and again, like the the manipulation, trickery, racism, like that runs through the porn industry, that's like baked in, right? That stuff that doesn't age well, stuff that like now hopefully, I mean, even though I don't think if you go to Pornhub right now, there's like little racism cue fetishes and like whatever, mm-hmm. like they're just what they call certain things. And it's just like, you know, you never know what's on purpose and what's not, and what's, you know, for clicks and like, and this, that, and the other, but like you would hope that at some point this shit would start to like get better. Like it would start to work itself out of, and like just be enjoyable sex for people. Like instead of a, you know, like you said, well, a 20 person. No, go ahead.
And you know what really ruins it for me is the whole family thing. I don't get that at all. The whole stepsister, stepdad, like, you know what I'm saying?
I do.
I was looking for like some porn just to watch with my husband the other day. Mm-hmm. And it was like the top like 10 things were all like family stuff. And I'm like, this is gross. It's disgusting. Like it turned me off. Like it's like.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
I find that is doing the show for as long as I've done it and just being a porn connoisseur myself, there's two camps, and it's like either you're really turned off by it, or you're like, okay, let's or whatever. And it's like such a taboo thing that you would never do in real life that I think that's what's grabbing people. I've seen some of those videos, not gonna lie, right? Like, and I've seen like what
I was in a stepmom one, and I was creeped out just being in it. It was my last movie.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I played a stepmom, and I was like during the whole thing, I'm like, this is creepy. Like it was just the start of that whole like my stepmommy type stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's just like harder and harder and harder and like, you know, like taboo, taboo, taboo. And in a way I think it's good, because maybe we like break all this stuff, and like any, you know, a freak is a freak is a freak, right? And everyone can have let their freak flag fly. That's a mouthful. But at the same time, like it sort of does make you wonder a bit, like, well, what's after that? You know what I mean? Like at what point are we gonna like get into like snuff films and shit, which I hope never happens. But I mean, you know, you do bring up a good point, because family stuff, like banging your stepbrother and, you know, stepmom or family gangbang or whatever is always in the top five. It's always in the top five on Pornhub. And what's crazy is like in my normal life, like I've come across that in having sex where it's like, oh, let's get freaky tonight and pretend. Like I've had conversations with people like around the show. Then obviously there's like the daddy daughter sort of kink, fucking daddy daddy little. They don't call it a daughter, but that's like a whole like, you know, kind of a dominant submissive like kink that people do play out in their relationships. So I think there's something to it, but I think you're not the only performer to be like, I hate this. I don't want to do this. Yeah. I'm out, you know? Cause you do hear that on a lot of podcasts.
Well, I have stepdad issues from when I was a teenager. So, And I know there are a lot of people in the industry who have like similar type things. And it's like, I don't think people realize like, especially when I'm streaming and stuff, and they're like, oh, I want you to pretend like you're my 19-year-old stepdaughter. And it's like that right there. You know, you just put me in like the worst like headspace.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't have said a worse thing.
That's a great point, because people who did have to suffer fucking abuse or like just fucking perverted bullshit from their dad or
it's
their stepdad or whatever.
From a family member.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that totally puts a huge larger point on it. Thanks for bringing that up, because I do think that is a fucking thing, right? Like there is a level of abuse that a lot of people have gone through that whether you've dealt with it or not, you don't want to hear that shit, whatever. Right. So,
and you know what? Maybe there's some performers out there who are using it to bond with their trauma. You know, I mean, that could be that doing that too. I don't know, but I know.
Sure.
What it means. Like, I just don't want
to
be part of it.
Totally. Okay. So your original run in mainstream porn was from 98 until when? Did you have a moment where you stepped out, or did you kind of?
2009 was my last movie, and that was My Stepmother Made Me Part 2.
Oh my God. Okay. That's awesome.
That's a good move on from the discussion.
Yeah. No. Okay. And what would you say were your, you said the little person, which is the PC
term. The title
is
the midget gangbang, and actually one of the actors described to me the difference between a midget and a dwarf. And he was a little person. So I know at the time he said it was okay to use that word, but like,
yeah, sure.
I wouldn't now. But
of
yeah,
course not. Yeah. So what were some of the other fun ones? Because you said the little person, the breathing fire. You said you were scared during the 20-person gangbang, but did you get comfortable? Did you eventually get comfortable and be like, yeah, all right, whatever?
I was in a totally different world in that scene. Yeah, I had to go to a different like space.
I bet. Yeah, I bet. Were there gangbangs like where maybe like four or five guys where it was fun?
Yeah, I did. There was a big boob bangaroo. That was a Jim Powers movie. And there was a big boob DP gangbang.
Big boob DP gangbang.
A lot of creativity goes into these titles.
Yeah, of course. Of course. But like, what were the favorite calls to get? Like, hey, we want you to do like, what would you prefer? Like, what was the most fun?
Peter North, to getting a call that you're going to do a scene with Peter North was one of the most exciting moments that I had. And that was like sort of towards the beginning that, you know, they were like, oh yeah, we're calling from Peter North's company and we want you to do. I'm like, I get to fuck Peter North. I was so happy.
Okay. Maybe explain to the audience, who is Peter North and why were you so excited?
Okay. Peter North is like the quintessential porn stud. Like he's been around since 70s. Would you say 70s, 80s, at least 80s, maybe 70s.
Yeah.
And he looks the same.
He's a robot.
And he's just beautiful. He's like a sex robot. He's just gorgeous. He looks like a Greek statue. He was somebody who, whenever I watched movies in college, he was in almost every porn movie that I remember seeing. He was honestly one of the, you know, I knew about like a handful of names of male performers, and I was really excited when I found out I was going to get to work with him, you know, cause I'd seen his movies and stuff. And, it's just almost surreal when you watch somebody and then like years later you're working with them. You know?
Yeah. No, I mean, that is like one of those things where sometimes I'll have someone on the show and I'm like, like right now. And I'm like, oh my God. And you kind of have to like turn it off and just be a normal person. Yeah. And just like fucking vibe with somebody. And then afterward, like sometimes I'm like, man, wow, I did almost 100 episodes of this podcast. And I've, you know, talked to people I've always wanted to talk to and ask the questions I've always wanted to ask. So like, I can't imagine, I can imagine a normal life sex, like having sex with someone that, oh, I really think this person's great or whatever. But yeah. in the industry, I mean, who are some of the other people that you were excited to actually partner up with and work with, have sex with? The good ones, not the creeps, obviously.
I tell you who I always wanted to and never did get to, and that's TT Boy. I always wanted to work with him, and I never got to work with him. You know who TT Boy is, right?
Yeah. Why him?
I met him on the set when I went to work with Peter North, and I was enthralled. I had the biggest crush on him after that. And
did you ever reach out to him outside the industry?
Yeah.
Okay, wait a minute. Breaking news. So did you guys hook up outside the industry?
Yeah, I did. When I was leaving the industry, I actually I ended up calling him and getting together with him. And then he put me in that last movie, which I kind of casting couched myself. You know, when you lay yourself down on the director's desk, the producer's desk, and then they say, hey, don't you want to be in a movie? Oh, yeah, sure.
Exactly. So you were in a movie, but you didn't get to work with him?
I didn't get to work with him, no.
But you worked with him in real life.
Yeah.
And so how was that a great experience?
It was excellent. It was amazing.
Oh my God, you're awesome. Well, that's fucking fascinating and a kind of a bombshell. I'm glad that you dropped that on Sex Party. What kind of things are you doing like on your OnlyFans now? Is it like a menu
cosplay.
Of things or okay?
I do cosplay. So like I have like 27 different themes now. Today I was Cougar Falls. I was a cougar at Cougar Falls.
Okay.
I have different animals and fantasy characters and mm-hmm. Like different stages of woman. I have like a queen and a goddess and a bride and like just different. I do cosplay. And then in the movies that I'm filming now, I play all the characters. and I'm making solo films, but I have different characters in my films. So,
yeah,
that's
okay.
Kind of what OnlyFans is about right now, and I make custom videos and stuff like that.
So people can like you know chime in with their requests, and you'll say, "Well, yeah. that'll cost this much," and whatever. Yeah. That's great.
And I'm having fun with it right now because I'm still learning, so my rates are like I think my OnlyFans is free; it's all paper. So
yeah, no, that's awesome. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So you're doing OnlyFans. You said streaming is your bread and butter. Yeah. And then are you also still doing mainstream or no?
What, like porn?
Yeah.
I don't even know.
What mainstream?
Even know, yeah. Like who's shooting? Is there even do they even have shoot porn anymore? Like,
I mean, I think somewhere. Yeah,
I think there are studios that do it, but
yeah,
it's
like
so,
Brad.
It's so interactive now. It's like why. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. Okay. And then let's talk a bit about your book, right? So when did it hit you? Like, okay, I have to write a book because your book serves as like a memoir, but also like sort of a, I mean, I feel like the excerpts that I read were fascinating because you're being so honest. So is it a memoir? And also, it sort of feels like a guide almost to me. Like if I was someone who was going to get into porn or whatever, if I was a woman that was whatever, that's the first thing I would pick up.
Well, it's very dated though. The industry is different than it was before.
Sure. But I think some of those lessons in there that you talk about
grooming, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So what was it like to write this book? How long did it take? Were you scared to put it out? Were you nervous?
I started it the day after Ron got arrested. Okay. And it started with, I wrote the crime first. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I felt like I had something. So I wrote what happened before the crime and then what happened after the crime. And then everything, like, just kind of from there. And then I switched things around. And then I put in the backstory of my teenage years being groomed by my parents, my adopted mother and stepfather. They were actually going to use me as a surrogate, kind of a Handmaid's Tale story. And a professional came in, figured out what was going on, and I was able to escape. And then I became a stripper. So,
right.
So that's kind of like in a nutshell, the backstory. So I had that the parallel with what Ron was doing, because it's all grooming. So there's a lot of different steps of grooming parallel in the book. I don't know where I was going with this. But yeah, I started writing it after Ron got arrested because all my trauma got brought up. And when I wrote it, it was the theme that came out was grooming. That was the thing. Like, that was my takeaway from writing the book. So that actually brought me to now. I'm going to college. I've been teaching about grooming, the six stages of grooming at colleges.
And what has the response been to those courses that you're teaching?
Well, I just go in for like a 1 hour talk.
Sure.
But yeah, I've had really good response. It's an interesting thing walking in as someone who is a sex worker presently, and to go into like a mainstream, especially because most of the people that come into my class are older. And I'm surprised at how open-minded they are. And I can tell by their questions, and that they have an understanding and a compassion for more than I thought, for people who are in sex work. And that's like, it's allowed me, because I'm a pretty isolated person because I'm a sex worker. So going in and talking to people who are sex workers about, you know, all this, and grooming is something that's so universal, you know, for me to talk about grooming, that's helpful to them. So it's been life changing. It's been great.
Yeah, no, that's really fucking awesome. And I can tell, like, in your eyes and your body language that you're proud of that, and you absolutely should be. I mean, again, to like have this sort of storied career in porn, where you did have trauma from your parents, right? And you did have trauma from Ron Jeremy, and instead of like curling up into a ball and dying, which there's nothing wrong with, right? But like,
oh, I did some of that.
Sure, I'm sure, because I think that's probably necessary, right? But mm-hmm. you are like almost like the embodiment of someone who took that trauma and like used that shit as fuel, and now you're going around still producing content, still enjoying yourself even more sexually, and you're teaching people about grooming. So like, I mean, that the combination of all that, like, that makes the hairs on my arm fucking stand up. That's why I wanted to do this show, is to have a fucking fun time, but also have episodes with you where it's fun, scary, valuable. And I hope that people really fucking not only get a ton out of this because of your story, but come over and like buy all your stuff, buy the book, like, you know, see if they can attend one of your talks, because it's huge. So I think that is so, so amazing. I want to end the episode with a question, maybe two. I don't know. We'll see where my mouth goes, but it's a big mouth, so you never know. So the first question that I have towards the end of the episode is, with all that being said, with your career, with your life, what advice would you give to a woman who wants to get into sex work?
Respect your own boundaries. That would be the overall advice, because if when somebody gets into sex work, they have a certain vision for what they want to do. And then opportunities open up for things that they have to make compromises with themselves to accept that opportunity. And if they don't set appropriate boundaries for themselves and respect those boundaries, then they're going to end up losing themselves. And that goes with in any aspect of the business, you know, all the businesses, you know.
Well, that's incredible. Jennifer Mondello, a.k.a. Jennifer Steele, the legend herself. Let's tell these party-going people where they can find you, where they can find your work, your book, your streaming, your OnlyFans, your socials.
Okay. My book is Adult Agency, a Memoir, and that's by Jennifer Steele Mondello. You can find that on jennifermondello.com. You can order autographed copies through there, or you can just simply go to Amazon, KDP. I've got my OnlyFans and my StreamMate accounts are both Jennifer Steele XXX. Jennifer Steele XXX. My Twitter is Jen Steele XXX, J-E-N-N. And I have an OnlyFans, the real Jennifer Steele. And that's it.
We will link everything in the notes, in the podcast notes, in the YouTube show notes. But I want to just say thank you for coming on and being real and being fun and being dark and telling your story. And I would love to have you back. So we'll have to set something like that up.
Yeah, I had a great time.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Big thank you to Jennifer for being on the show with me, for sharing her story. It's incredibly important. It's incredibly timely. I mean, we're already working on her return, so she will be back. If you're loving guests like Jennifer, if you're still on board with me and all my shenanigans, if you're loving the new set we have building slowly back here on Sex Party, there's a couple different ways you can show that love, that appreciation, that desire for more Sex Party. If you're listening to platforms like Apple and Spotify, you can subscribe to the show. That is the most important thing you can do. You can never miss an episode, right? Every Wednesday. If you like, you can also leave a rating. You can also leave a review. If you're watching on YouTube, come on. That's enough. Just kidding. I love you. If you're watching on YouTube, I love you. I see you. I appreciate you. If you're watching on YouTube, you can subscribe to the channel. It's the most important. You can like this video. You can like all the videos. You can leave a comment. As always, I am available in the DMs on Instagram, and I will see you all right back here next week.
Thanks for listening. The party continues next week. Click subscribe and let's make this a regular thing. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter @SexPartyFM. Follow Dustin @DustinRibka.